This week in Retronauts,
begun the Clone Wars did.
Welcome to Retronauts, and welcome to what might be the last podcast of 2023. That's probably not true, but you know what? It feels like the last podcast of 2023 because I don't have a good reason to finish that sentence. I might cut that joke out. But in any case, I'm your host, Diamond Fight, and fun fact about me, in the event of my death, my body will face you, the viewer of my body, perpetually. I don't know why that happened. I'd like to think it's genetic, but, you know, it's something I think we can all do with practice. I'm joined here by two returning guests. Let's start with the guest in the United Kingdom.
Oh, it's me. No, I'm sorry. I was doing the Tommy Tallarico joke. It's not funny. Hello. I'm Stuart Jip, and I don't have a pithy remark for this. I like Doom clones. There. How's that?
Oh, okay. All right. Yes. And joining us again from the United States.
Yes, I am David L. Craddock. I'm the co-writer and director of FPS First Person Shooter, and I will open by quoting Doom Guy.
Mm. Whoa. This podcast just got sexy.
Well, I'm coming in controversially, sexually. That's Doom Guy, though. I mean, he's just raw masculinity. Oh,
where is it?
Thank you, David. Thank you. We needed that. We needed your expert opinion to get that in there, because I don't know if I could quote Doom Guy off the top of my head. I think I'd have to look that up.
Hmm.
But yes, our episode today is not about Doom per se, but it is about the Doom phenomenon, and specifically Doom clones, because Doom was so big that lots of other games came out that were kind of like Doom, and for a good few years there, we all just called them Doom clones. That was a real thing that happened. It was in magazines, it was in newspapers, it was in a conversation you would have with people. Well, it's like, oh, did you try that new Doom clone? Like, that was a thing people said to one another in between, I guess, buying beepers at the mall? I don't know. It's the 90s.
Buying Doom clones at the mall.
Yeah, Doom clones at the mall, of course.
From the Doom clone store. Sorry. This is going to be one of those podcasts where every time I speak, the conversation just comes to a crashing halt. And then the comments are like, get rid of this fat, bald Englishman.
No, I remember those stores. There was Software, Etc., and then Doom Clones, Etc. So I remember
exactly. Yeah.
I was there.
So, before we get to the clone part, I'd like to start a little bit, just a little bit about Doom, because as we're recording this in the year 2023, the second year of Luigi, we're heading very fast to the 30th anniversary of Doom itself. Doom will be 30 years old very soon.
I actually got a little bit emotional hearing that. That's weird. This game means a hell of a lot to me, so that's probably why.
Yes. Same. So before we talk about the Doom clone, I'd like to talk about Doom a little bit itself. First of all, David, in seven words or less, what is Doom?
Doom is the alpha and the omega of everything.
Yep.
It is, I'm going beyond seven words, but it is really the prototypical first-person shooter from which all of the other ones devolved, even the ones that had nothing in common with Doom. Doom is the reason the genre is popular and has propagated today.
That checks out in my brain. What do you think, Stu?
It's difficult to put into words. Doom resides at the very peak of what gaming can be. And I mean in the sense that it's a 10 out of 10 game with a 10 out of 10 community, 10 out of 10 culture.
Yes.
It's lived for 30 years. It's never been inactive. Hmm. There have been mods made for this game for 30 years. People keep going back to Doom for a very, very good reason, which is that it's perfect. It doesn't have any flaws. And if there are any flaws, they're just part of its perfection. I mean, I'm not going to get into it now, but I'm one of those people who prefers Doom to Doom 2 by a significant margin, because I feel like anything that touches the kind of purity of Doom is, in a sense, making it worse.
I'm right there with you.
But we're talking about 10 out of 10 games here, so, you know.
Right there with you.
I don't even know what to say. I wrote a thing about Doom a few years ago, I think when it was 25, and the final line is, I'm not trying to be pretentious here, but the final line was, if the afterlife doesn't have Doom, I refuse to die, and I stand by that. I can't imagine a world where I don't have to, I can't have play Doom anymore. Like I need to play it. It's like an opiate. You know, it really is just perfect, and it's like a dance. And when you're playing it on a high skill level, you're not even thinking; you're just acting. And no other game gets in my brain like that. No, none of them. It's the Zen thing. It's, you know, when you're in the zone, but it's always, it's the peak of, it's the best game ever made, basically.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I play Doom at a minimum once a year. This time I think I've played it 3 or 4 times. I think one reason it endures, well, there are a couple, right? Like, there are the practical ones, which the first among them would be John Carmack releasing the source code, which allowed anyone to kind of, you know, create source ports and just keep Doom modern, but not in the modern way that, as Stuart so eloquently put it, would add flaws to its design. Like, you can buy source, or buy, you can download source ports that allow free aiming, jumping, crouching. Doom didn't need any of that. Its elegance is still relevant today, which is why the community is still making maps for it. The people are still making source ports. If at the core of the game weren't so elegant, I don't think people would care about it, no matter how many maps people put out. It's so accessible. You know, you don't have to free aim. There's no jumping. There's no crouching. That's why, you know, when John Carmack got it into his head to experiment with the iPhone, he ported Wolfenstein 3D first, I think. And that game has a lot of flaws. It's great, but it has a lot of flaws. Doom was the perfection. It's the Super Mario world of first-person shooters. It's so refined. And it works on a phone because you don't have, you know, a screen full of icons for all these different functions. You move, you shoot, and you use. That's it. And it works so well. The movement is perfect. The shooting is perfect. And I have to agree with Stuart. I like a lot of, I think Doom 2, like, rounded out the bestiary in a good way. I like the super shotgun, but Doom 1 is my favorite Doom because it was the first, because I like the level design and pacing better. I feel like Doom 2, one of the most famous levels is downtown, which is fun, but it's so big that there's literally an arrow on the ground telling you where to go. And I feel like if you need to paint an arrow into your level, maybe your design is off.
The microcosm for Doom 2, so I'm not going to bitch about Doom 2 for 2 hours, though I probably could. It's a fantastic game, but unfortunately they put the chain gun soldiers in there, and I just really don't think they're fun. An enemy with a hitscan weapon that can hit you from across the map and do insane damage almost instantly, and then the game will often throw them into bit. Like, you'll walk into a room, and then, like, 3 monster closets will open up behind you with chain gunners in them.
Yeah.
And I get a little bit kind of like, this ain't Doom. This ain't as good as Ultimate Doom. This is like Doom, but like all the bits that they had left. I like the Archvile. You know, I like the Revenants. I just don't like those chain gunners. And I don't really like the general scope of Doom 2. I don't think it's as good, but I still think it's still a 10 out of 10 and not insane. Like, it's a brilliant, brilliant game. It's just not as good as the Ultimate Doom for me.
I would say, you know, and again, I won't bitch about it for 2 hours. I would say it's maybe a 9 because I don't think the level design is as refined. I think those big open spaces were novel. Yeah. But the thing about Doom is if you ever have to slow down and think, you know, realize you're lost, I think you have a problem. And that doesn't really happen in Doom. I also consider Doom 1 as much of a horror game as it is an action game. Doom 2 is pretty much just action from beginning to end. And I think that just speaks to the better pacing of Doom. In fact, obviously the PC version is the best version, but I'm also very partial to the PlayStation port because Williams leaned into that, worked with id Software, so id Software signed off on it. Yeah. But the music and the sound effects, it's a scary game, and it's so good.
It gives it such a different vibe. Who did the music? I can never remember their name. They did the Doom 64.
Audrey Hodges.
They did the Doom 64 music as well, I believe. And Doom 64 is a much more atmospheric kind of like horror one as well.
Yeah. So there's an interesting sort of sequence there where Williams approached id and they're like, hey, we want to do a PlayStation port. And id was like, okay, well, let's see how that goes. And it was such a success that id said, you know what? Do a new Doom game, do whatever you want. And so that's why the PSX soundtrack and just soundscape was carried over to Doom 64. It's because Williams just knocked that out of the park. And it's really, really cool how that came about.
Yeah. I think Doom on the PlayStation, that's, correct me if I'm wrong, but they kind of mashed up the Ultimate and Doom 2 and some of the Master Levels, as well as a few new ones thrown in there as well, I believe. It's like a really impressive collection of levels. There's like loads, just like over 50 levels in there.
Yeah, I think that's like a lot of these Doom ports derived from the Jaguar base that id did in house. And one of the novel things about PlayStation Doom is Ultimate Doom is not divided into episodes, right? It's contiguous. So it's kind of a little like, if you're a Doom nerd, you're like, what, you mean I get to keep all my weapons going into Shores of Hell and Inferno? And yeah, like it's just a cool thing. And yes, Stuart, to your point, if you play on Ultra Violence, you will occasionally see some Doom 2 enemies in the Doom 1 levels, so, which is so also cool. Just a cool thing. Yeah.
Yeah. with Doom, I mean, I think it's possible. I'm quite kind of a purist about it because I remember playing GZ Doom, the source port, the incredibly impressive source port. And by default, it has free aim and it's in 60 frames per second. And I'm like, I can't play it like this. I understand that it's probably objectively better. But this ain't Doom to me. It just feels and looks wrong. So I had to go into the menu and figure out how to half the frame rate and figure out how to make it so I couldn't look up and down because it was so wrong. And I just felt like a beast. Like, I was just like taking this hard work that they've done and I'm just undoing it for my own. But it's such a good game. Yeah. It's one of those perennials for me. It's like that, Lemmings, and probably, I don't know, like Sonic 1 or something. They're just like untouchable games.
Now that we've quickly established why we all love it, I think, I just want to ask another important question, which is, was Doom your first-person shooter? David, where is Doom on your first-person shooter experience?
I believe it was my second or my third. My first FPS was Wolfenstein 3D. I've told this story before, hopefully not here, but I was sick one day from school. I had to go to my mom's medical transcription class, so I camped out in the back, and it was taught by this little old lady who called me up and showed me Wolfenstein on her computer, and I just thought it was the coolest thing, so she gave me the shareware disc. And then a year and a half later, I was in Sunday school, again at the back of the room, which is just my stomping grounds, I guess, and my friend Aaron was like, psst, and he showed me this magazine and showed me screenshots of Doom, and I was like, what is this? And I got the shareware of that. I think it came on at least two or three floppy disks. Maybe that was the full version that I ordered from id's 1-800 number. I don't remember. My mom had to give them her credit card. That's how long ago this was, right? But Doom immediately put Wolfenstein and Catacomb 3D, which I think I'd played on like one of those 1,000 game CD-ROMs, you know, collections.
Hell yeah.
Put it to shame. Like, Doom is just the most... Yeah, it is. It was not my first, but it was the first that counted. How about that?
Right.
Why aren't we calling Doom a Catacombs clone? What the heck?
Yeah.
Cataclome.
Nice.
How about you, Stu?
I'm pretty sure it was the first. I have this weird long-term memory of seeing it at a friend's house that is just like may or may not have happened. It's one of those memories. Mm-hmm. But my first PC came with some pre-installed shareware episodes of or like demos, and there was like Lemmings and like Duke Nukem, the platformer, and Doom was one of them. It was the first episode of Doom, and you know, I wasn't really old enough to be hugely aware that that wasn't the full game. And of course I would play through it using just the keyboard to turn, and like I didn't strafe, I didn't really fuck with strafing, you know. This little kid going through the game eventually figured out how to get the god mode and just cheat and get all the weapons, but all in the demo I believe you couldn't get the plasma rifle or the BFG.
Correct.
So those were alien to me. But making my way through that game, and at the end you fight the two Barons of Hell, and as far as I know, that's the end of Doom. You go into the final teleport and you get ripped to pieces, and it's terrifying. And, you know, I loved it. I thought it was great, but I didn't really get its claws into me until a good few years later when I was in, like, I want to say Toys R Us, maybe? With my family, and I saw this box set, and this was a long time later, and it was like the Depths of Doom trilogy, And it's Doom 2 and Maximum Doom, which is the master levels plus a load of like WADs that like, gathered from the internet, like harvested from the internet. And it comes in this big box with like a big cyber demon on it. And the cyber demon, it's been like embossed, like, you know, when something kind of pops out from the box. And it's like the coolest shit I've ever seen in my entire life. And I think it was quite cheap. It was like 30 quid because Doom is old by now. And I was just like, if I don't get this, but like, I've got my mom by like the lapels. I'm like, if you don't buy me this, I'm not going to speak to you again for the rest of my life. I'm going to do the biggest thing. Okay. In a more polite way than that, most likely. But, yeah, but then it was just like delving into this. Holy shit. I have like 700 megabytes of WADs here. Just like levels after level, like Beavis and Butthead in Doom, where the only difference is that he's just going, the whole time. Like the Simpsons Doom, where all the enemies are Simpsons enemies, Simpsons characters, you know?
Yeah.
And just like all these mad levels, and some of which were not safe for work, and that was interesting. But it was my first exposure to like the sheer scope of the game. And this was like the Windows version of Doom, where when you launch it, you'd have like a launcher, pick the level, go straight into multiplayer. Because Doom 95, that's what I think what it was called.
Yes.
And at the time, I thought it was great. I imagine if I went back to it now, I would probably be like, what the hell is this? But at the time, I loved it. And it was a big step up from the shareware. And finally being able to play through the whole game, plus being able to play through, you know, Doom 2 as well, was pretty great, especially since it let you choose the level and I could skip right to, like, all the secret levels and mess around and do the Wolfenstein stages and Barrels of Fun and Tricks and Traps, which was my favorite level. And that was Doom 2, I believe. Big game for me. Bit of a rambly answer, sorry.
It's easy to do with Doom. All love here. All love.
So I was, like David, I know I played Wolfenstein 3D first. Although I think by the time I played Wolfenstein 3D, Doom was either almost out or coming out very soon. I didn't really have access to quality gaming PCs until I was in my early 20s. So I was actually in France and visiting as part of like a school exchange program. And the person I was visiting had Wolfenstein 3D like on a laptop or something. And I was just, as soon as I saw it, I was kind of transfixed. I'm like, wait, what am I doing? Wait, oh, wow. And I loved it. And I played it a lot while I was there, probably more than I should have. You know, I probably should like spent more time like, you know, speaking French and trying to like get a feel of what life in France is like. But I was like, no, this is much more important, Wolfenstein 3D. And then a couple years later, when I was in college, my roommate had a good computer, and he had Doom and Doom 2. And then it was like, whenever he was, you know, whenever he was willing to let me do it, I would just get on there and play a lot of Doom. And that was also me like, oh, this is fantastic. I love this. This is, you know, I recognize that it's being an evolution of Wolfenstein, especially because Doom 2 has like those, like the Wolfenstein level thing. But yeah, it's like night and day. You know, there's so many things that are just, you know, upgraded and improved and radically reimagined. So I didn't get my own copy really until many, many years later. I got the PlayStation version because that was exciting for me. That was the first ever like first person multiplayer game I ever did, because you could have two PlayStations and hook them together. So my friends and I went through a lot of hassle to get two PlayStations and two TVs. And I think we had to rent a copy from the video store. So we'd have like, we bought one copy and rented a copy. And we did all this just to play Doom. And it was absolutely worth it, because it was like an awesome night when like this second year playing Doom and you see another Doom guy running around the screen in front of you. And it's like what your friend is doing. That is like a euphoric feeling that I can't quite explain. It's just like, oh, my God, look at that little guy. Look at the little guy. It's my friend. He's a little guy.
I think for a lot of people, that was their first, you know, PC multiplayer experience. It was different than like, oh, I'm sitting next to a guy, you know, my friend who's holding the second NES controller. It was a really more magical thing because these two PCs were talking to each other, like fundamentally, and it was a really special thing.
I find that interesting because for me, Doom, like, it's just in no way a multiplayer game in my head. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I have played it on multiplayer before, but for me, Doom is so based around secrets and exploration and combat with these specific types of enemies that I can't think of it as a multiplayer game. And it may be co-op on console, but that's still the same experience. It's just there's a friend there to kill him by mistake and on purpose, obviously. It's weird because I bet for some people the exact opposite is true. And it's pretty much only a multiplayer game. But I thought that was interesting anyway.
I, I'm kind of the same way. I've played Doom multiplayer, and obviously, like, that was probably one of the big breakthrough features, because deathmatch did become a thing, starting with Doom. But I've played it much more single player. But to your point, when I interviewed Dennis Fong, aka Thresh, for this FPS documentary, he said, "Oh yeah, I've never beaten any Doom campaigns. I couldn't even tell you who the final bosses are. I just played multiplayer." Like, it was, and I actually associate multiplayer much more with Quake than with Doom. But it was definitely the start of deathmatch, and just that becoming the first esport over time.
Yeah, and I mean, Quake sort of, I don't like to use this word wrongly, but it's sort of kind of codified like all multiplayer shooters.
Yeah,
like, going forward to some extent, and then Call of Duty ruined it, but boomer shooters are back now, so it's okay.
So let us attempt to define what exactly is a Doom clone. I think your run-of-the-mill definition is just it was a catch-all term for first-person shooters that appeared in the 90s, because Doom was such a big hit, lots of other people decided, well, we can make a Doom as well. And some of them tried new things, some of them just tried to make Doom again, and some of them were great and some of them were not so great. But for a while there, I want to say for a good maybe 5 years or so, like, Doom clone was just, that's what you called them. No one said first-person shooter. They just said Doom clone.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like how, in the immediate wake of Street Fighter II, like, there were a bunch of things people tried to say about other fighting games, but it wasn't until, like, I want to think, say, like, mid-90s, that people just said, oh, it's a fighting game, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, it fell out of favor before, I want to say, the millennium turned around, and we can talk about why you think that happened, but eventually people decided, okay, these are first-person shooters. That's the term we're going to use. And these days, you don't really hear anyone say Doom clone anymore.
Mm.
I think the new hip term for quote-unquote old-fashioned first-person shooters is boomer shooter.
Hell yeah.
I'm wondering, what do you think? Are boomer shooters Doom clones? Are those terms synonymous, or are they different?
I mean, most of the ones that I've played are very much like, we are biting this game. We are, but like, Iron Fury is biting Duke Nukem 3D. Something like Graven is biting like Hexen, with a cross between like Deus Ex, maybe. But a game like Dusk is just like, yeah, this is Quake.
Mm-hmm.
And a Doom clone, I mean, there are some like head-on, which are based on the Doom engine. So you could call those Doom clones in good conscience, I believe. But I gotta be honest, it's not a term that really saw me, I really saw outside of magazines. And it was the same as like a platformer being a Mario clone, or like, as you say, the other example you gave, which has gone out of my head for some reason, but it was very pertinent. Yes, Street Fighter clone. Yes, exactly. So I think it's a very mixed bag. I think what the boomer shooters are going for is something that is more of a kind of like, we're sick of this kind of boots on the ground linear kind of campaign stuff. We want like secrets. We want ridiculous movement speed.
Hmm.
And I think Quake is the touch point for most of those games personally. Doom is there. Doom is always there. Doom is omnipresent, because there is no Quake without Doom, and there's no Duke Nukem 3D without Doom. But I do think they take, I would say, as a baseline, a build engine level of maneuverability. But it really does vary from game to game, obviously. I mean, there are some, like the Postal one, Postal Brain Damaged, which don't really feel like anything else, but still have this very distinct old shooter feel, which I mean, the boomer shooter renaissance has been like the second coming of Christ to me, honestly. I haven't played one where I've thought, this sucks, I'm not having fun. Like, and I've played almost all of them. It's just been incredible. Like, the community has mutually decided, we want old shooters back. And they've brought them back, and sometimes better than ever. It's incredible.
Yeah, actually, I think, Stu, that's really important what you hit on something. I really feel like the boomer shooters are sort of almost defined by what they're not. Like, they're purposely retro style. They're purposely, you know, aping back to another era that sort of went out of fashion, and they're basically bringing it back into fashion. And so it's less about, oh, we're imitating this. Like, we are not doing this. We don't want a Call of Duty. We don't want a Resistance. We don't want a Duke Nukem Forever. No one wants Duke Nukem Forever. I think we've established this, but
don't get me started on Duke
Nukem Forever. I do like that idea that, you know, a boomer shooter is almost like pushing back against, oh no, let's turn the clock back to another time and let's not do what people are doing now. And now it's almost like, because of their efforts, we kind of have these, you know, more genres to play with, I think.
Sorry, I don't want to talk too, like, super go on and on because of David's here. I feel bad rambling.
No, not at all.
What I feel like is, and I'm not trying to do one of my patented hot takes here, okay, but as good as Half-Life is, that was the game that, for me, was the dagger in the heart of the traditional Doom clone, because that changed the game. Like, that was a narrative-focused, like, big open thing. I'm sure there are games before it that had similar vibes, but Half-Life was the one, because Half-Life is like, if you explore the maps, you're not going to find anything interesting. I mean, you might find interesting angles, you might find some ammo, but there are there's no real secrets, maybe a couple of Easter eggs. You're following this story through. And it sort of went that way. And then, of course, the next popular one was Call of Duty, and that became the whole kind of, you can carry two weapons, your boots on the ground, a very linear campaign kind of, you're not up in the air, you're not flying around or anything. And when they did introduce that into Call of Duty, it flopped quite hard. But then the boomer shooters sort of came back, I think, in the wake of the 2016 Doom, because that was the one that went like, oh yeah, you get shooters where you can move around really fast are fun. I feel like there is a line there, like the last of the original classic shooters, and I'm going to get jumped on for this, is probably Daikatana, which is obviously a legendarily, you know, air quotes, awful game. I think it's pretty good, personally. I know it has its problems, but it's the last game I can think of where it has that similar vibe, where it's worth exploring the maps to find things tucked away in places that are challenging to reach. Because immediately following that, or around the same time as that, Half-Life comes along, and it's just pretty much straight lines. Not a bad game by any means, but it changed everything. It changed shooters, I think. It killed the Doom clone until the boomer shooter brought it back, basically.
I think most people would agree with that. Half-Life was definitely a paradigm shift. I love Half-Life, but you know, I definitely prefer Doom and that style of shooter. I think what Half-Life did really well, and it shares this in common with Doom, is the sense of place was really strong, at least until Zen. That, you know, that just doesn't exist to me. But Black Mesa, the Black Mesa facility was as memorable as any environment in Doom for me. But I also think, just talking about the era of the Doom clone, that was kind of a magical time, and not so much out of nostalgia, but because that was before genre titles and definitions became codified, and people got really upset if you tried to color outside those lines. The Doom clone was a very broad term, and I kind of liked it more broad than first-person shooter. I mean, you have people who say, like, oh, you know, Deus Ex, System Shock, those are not first-person shooters. I'm like, well, they are, but there's a fork there, and that's okay. But, you know, you couldn't really argue, like, oh, this is a Doom clone. You're like, oh, yeah, it definitely is, because you're, you know, first-person shooting. Doesn't matter your weapons, doesn't matter the enemies, doesn't matter the levels. It's a Doom clone.
I mean, the most important thing in the world to gamers, apparently, is that you describe things within very specific parameters. And that's all day. That's what they do all day. They argue about whether a thing is another thing or not. And it's just no way to live your life.
it's really not. And these are also the same people who, you know, believe that the console wars are a thing beyond, you know, a marketing blitz and simple competition. But I really like the idea of Doom clones and the boomer shooter. I'm glad they're back, because we are seeing, just as we did in the early to mid-90s when Doom clone was in vogue, we are seeing shooters across a broad spectrum experimenting with ideas. And that, to me, was fundamental to Doom clones. It wasn't just Doom. It started that, for sure. But you had games like Descent and like even Heretic, which was Doom with a fantasy skin, but it was still kind of a different thing. You had developers really experimenting with like, what else can we do with this sort of thing? And it was just a fun time.
I absolutely love Heretic. I loved it when I was a kid. I had that somehow. And I love that as well. Can't say I loved Hexen, but they tried their very best.
Well, I think Hexen had like a cool idea, but one of my issues with it was like it was so inscrutable. Like the second level was supposed to be a hub world. I could never ever figure out where to go from there. Like I think I found one or two, offshoot areas, but I just got stuck and fed up. I thought Heretic was a lot simpler and because of that a lot more elegant and fun.
I played Hexen with the strategy guide on my lap and I still got lost constantly. Basically, there's something I love about this as a kind of act of defiance in a way, but like to progress in Hexen, you need to do things that in like Doom would be a secret. Mm-hmm. Like you have found like a berserk pack or something, but in this game, it's like, no, you have to go into this room and then on this one part of the gray wall, there's a gray switch. And if you hit the gray switch, it says something moved somewhere.
Yeah.
And in one of the five connected hub maps, you there is now a door that's open or is unlocked or something. And it's just like, what are you doing? It could have been, if they just done another linear game like Heretic, but with the Hexen bestiary, it would have been awesome. There's some really cool monsters and weapons in that game.
That's why, I see people, tweeting it or Xing, whatever the hell it's called this week, at Phil Spencer. bring back Hexen. And I'm like, why? That's to me when nostalgia just drives people insane. Well, like, oh, this old thing, bring it back.
If they bring back Hexen and they add in that feature they put into the Quake 2 port where it has like a compass that shows you where to go next, then maybe.
Yes.
And I'm the kind of crappy gatekeeper who will always say, no, make game hard. Do not put in easy mode. That's me. But with that game, I'm willing to make an exception because it's a fucking pain in the ass.
It arguably needed it.
Yeah.
Like then, and it needs it now.
I was going to sort of add, because it was what you said, and I'm just sort of reiterating it, but I think it's fascinating that Doom Clone covers like everything from Heretic to like shit like Witchhaven, that was a bit mean, shit like Witchhaven. Games that are less beloved like Witchhaven, I'll say that, because I've not played it that much, and like, the impression I get is that it's not great, but I don't want to say that if that's not actually true. But every day it seems like I somehow managed to dig up another Doom clone that I didn't know existed, like friggin' Cyclones or like Nam, Mm-hmm. It's fascinating stuff. Nowadays you've got stuff like a Medieval and this huge spectrum of shooters across all genres, like immersive sims are back and your fantasy ones, like you already mentioned, a Medieval and that 3D Realms one, the name of Wrath, Aeon of Ruin, that's coming out soon.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, they're just back, baby. Shooters are just back for me. Like, they were gone, and now they're back. And I like Call of Duty. I'll play a Call of Duty campaign, but it doesn't compare to Dusk, really. It doesn't compare to something like that.
All right, now before we get to the dessert part of the podcast where we all just talk about games we love, I want to do a little bit of edgy digging here. And can we attempt to quantify some qualities that we believe are essential to Doom cloneness?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to riff here and you let me know what you think. So, first of all, like the most basic, first person? Yes?
Yes.
Has to be first person.
Yeah, I would say so. There are some games like MDK, which are quite close to being a Doom clone, that aren't first person, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go ahead and say yes anyway, just for the sake of, harmony.
Okay.
I remember being at Duke Nukem 3D. I think if you pressed F7, you could play in third person, and Duke was translucent, which was a pretty good idea, so you could still see what... I think
it was called, like, chase mode or something.
Like, it was a neat... this is kind of a cool thing that exists, but then you go right back to first person.
Now, as we discussed earlier, Doom is very much a kind of 2.5D game in that, you are basically on a plane, and while, you can go up and down like stairs and elevators, you never actually have any vertical movement, and you never have to look up or down because that's just not how Doom works. So what about mouse look, does it bend or break the Doom clone walls?
I'll allow it because, you know, Quake is a Doom clone. It wasn't going to be that, but it became that. Mm-hmm. And Quake has mouse look, and I would say yes.
I think, yeah, I mean, didn't Duke have mouse look as well? Duke 3D, I could be wrong about that.
It did, yeah.
I will allow it. I will be more pedantic, and I will say, I know you can look left and right with the mouse, but to look up and down, you have to press page up and page down. That's the rules. I'm not allowing heretic. You're doing heretic.
Okay, so Doom famously gives you a lot of weapons to work with, different shapes, different sizes, different power levels. So, but they're mostly ranged weapons. I mean, you get the chainsaw and you can punch demons if you get close to them, but basically it's mostly about shooting them far away. So I have a question. Would an all melee game count? You know, because there are some first person games that are just all about like first person punching and kicking. Does that qualify as Doom clone?
Are there any all melee Doom clones that exist? There must be.
Wasn't there that
Xbox game called Breakdown or something that was the first person like?
But I don't even know if that would. See, now we're far outside the era of the Doom clone. I think the fact that we can't think of any might indicate the answer. I'm not going to, you know, die on the hill, but I would probably say generally no.
I mean, I know it's not the same and it is breaking the rules, but Hexen is all melee for like the first hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on how lost you get.
That's true.
Depending on the class you pick, because there's only the mage starts with a ranged weapon in that game. So maybe, I don't know, I don't see why it wouldn't count, assuming that the weapons are actually interesting. In fact, I'd like to see this. You know, I'm sure it exists out there. Someone's going, you've forgotten about this game, you fool. But I don't know.
I'm wondering if maybe some magazine writer might have looked at, say, Kingsfield and said, oh, look, this is a weird, like, RPG Doom clone. Because, like, it is first person and you have a sword. But, like, to me, Kingsfield is so different compared to Doom that I really can't call it a Doom clone, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a Dark Souls clone, isn't it? Sorry, that's
retroactively.
Kingsfield is like perpetually on my list. Stewardship must play this game because I know I'm going to love it. You ever have that thing where you know you're going to love something so you never play it because you want to play it at the perfect time? That's my life right now.
Yes, yes. In my case, it's called Metal Gear Solid, and it's literally staring at me on my desk right now.
But, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think Stuart raises some good points. I would add, though, that with Hexen, the melee combat was complementary. You did eventually, I think every class had range up. I mean, I didn't get far enough to know.
Their second or third weapon was ranged, yeah, but it's an opening of just beating the shit out of Etans for like 2 hours, basically.
Which
adds to the fact that you're bored as hell when you play Hexen.
Yeah, like maybe what they were going for there was like, okay, this was an option in Doom, but this is what you're going to do at the start, and you're going to kind of earn your shotgun, so to speak. But it wasn't really, like, it was novel, and I really like the feedback of the melee in that game and the sound, but it definitely, I preferred Heretic because you get shooty, shooty, bang, bang weapons right away.
I guess when I think of first-person melee games, they're all modern. Like,
yeah,
something like Chronicles of Riddick, which is well past star, you know. But nowadays there's stuff like Chivalry and Kingdom Come, and those are first-person melee games. But there's nothing within the era that we're talking about, I think. That falls under those. I think in theory, yes, but it's never happened, so it has to be a no, I think.
Okay. How about inventory limits or weapon swapping? Because Doom, you know, gives you all these weapons, and you can basically keep them all and just switch between them as your leisure. But as you mentioned earlier, games like Call of Duty and most modern shooters, you only can carry so many weapons at once. You have to basically change weapons depending on the situation. So what do you think? Does that push against Doom clone?
Absolutely not.
Inventory limits, maybe yes. Weapon swapping, absolutely not. You have to have all your weapons available at any time and pressing the arrow number keys. That's just how it is.
It is.
Any deviation from that, your game can go to hell.
If you look at when id Software, any permutation of the company, reinvented Doom, like Doom 3 was, you know, they said it was a remake, whether it is or not, whatever. In Doom 2016, Doom Eternal, you have all your weapons available. Once you found it, it's yours. That's Doom.
Doom 3, though, I'm going to say it, underappreciated.
Yes! I like it more than Doom 2. I really do.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good take. Now,
I said it.
See, the thing for me is, I have to be honest with you, like, it did take the BFG edition for me to love it. Because while I respect the whole swapping to the torch thing, I do think that just having the torch as an attachment is better. Because it means you can just be ready to fire at a moment's notice. And when that game, since that game is hard, it's really not easy at all. It's nice to be able to just be ready to fire and ready to see at the same time. I think they rebalanced it quite nicely. But yeah, Doom 3, once you get through that first like hour, 2 hours, it's really fucking good. I love it.
Yeah, I think that like, because id was advertising it as much of a horror game as an action game, which to me, again, is the spirit of Doom 1.
Yes.
I think survival horror is all about making choices that affect your risk, you know, a risk reward scenario.
Yeah.
And I do like having the flashlight mounted, but I also liked having to choose whether I'm going to have a light or shoot. I thought that was a cool little choice.
I respect the hell out of that mechanic, and I wish I liked playing it more. But I have to choose the convenience over it personally. I mean, for me, it's like, you get to say, like, the fourth map in that game, and there's a lot of people who say it's not Doom, it's not Doom. And I think the people who say that haven't got that far into it. And I know that's a bit of a dodgy thing to say, but if you get to, like, that fourth or fifth map and you're surrounded by monsters constantly and you're just whipping around, firing and firing, you're like, oh, it's an imp, I've got to use this. Oh, it's, like, a baron, I've got to use this. Oh, it's the spider things, I've got to use this. That's Doom. That's Doom. Like, for me, what I love so much about the original Doom, and I'm sorry you've got me off on one again, is walking into a room, seeing the spread of monsters that's in front of you, taking in the environment as quickly as you can, and just being like, okay, the tango begins. Like, yeah. Switch to this weapon. These are hit scan. Take out the hit scan. They're the most dangerous ones. Then we've got some arachnotrons. Switch to rocket launcher. Go over here. Do this. And it really is just automatic when you're good at it. When you, I'm no expert, but when you get in the zone, it's just like, oh, it's like nothing else. It's so good. Anyway, answer your question, no.
To answer your question, no. I will say that this is related to the question, and this is another hot take. Doom Eternal is not a good Doom game. Because they, and I wrote about this. I talked to, you know, Hugo Martin, among other people, and they said, you know, Doom 2016, basically, we didn't like that you had a choice and you could always use the super shotgun if you wanted to. So we designed enemies at harder difficulties around forcing you, basically forcing you to switch to the optimal weapon to defeat them. Hmm. And he's like, that's Doom. And I'm like, well, you're halfway right, Hugo, because
I would tentatively and politely disagree. But
with Hugo or with me?
With you in the suggestion that it's not a good Doom game. Not in the sense of like, I know what you mean when you say that. I don't think you just mean it's not a good game, obviously. Unless you do mean that, in which case we're going to fight.
I think it is a good game and I love watching it. But to me, Doom is quintessential that if I have all these weapons and I choose to use one and can make a strategy work, that's part of Doom to me. But I will clearly...
No, I agree. You know. I see where you're coming from. For me, because I'm so switching weapons so often in Doom, usually, for just effectiveness, I really felt like it did capture the feel of the original Doom in a way that I hadn't really experienced before, but only specifically in the combat. The lack of ammo does bother me. The way you've got to switch to the chainsaw to get ammo, mainly because mechanically that makes no sense. Why would the enemies be full of ammo? It makes no sense. I know there's a lot of questions like, oh, there's no such thing as flying imps anyway, but that's not the point. There's no connection to me between a chainsaw and ammo. There really is none. But I still enjoy it once I get into the vibe. When I'm not in the vibe, it's the worst thing ever. I just can't play it. I can't get like past one encounter. But when I'm into it, I'm just like, yeah. Because I didn't beat Doom 2016 until a few months ago. And by the end, I was just like, because I started out kind of not digging it. And then by the end, a bit like Doom 3 in a way, I was just kind of like, yeah, that was awesome. That was really, really, really fun. But Eternal, it's such a departure. But I do think they managed to capture some of that Doom feel in there. But whenever someone says to me, I didn't like Doom Eternal, I thought it was like OTT, it wasn't Doom. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I see where you're coming from as well. Like, I respect that as well.
Yeah, like I don't think it's a bad game by any stretch. And I think it was probably the smart decision to go in the direction they did because it, you know, I think if they hadn't, it would have just been Doom 2016 2. Yeah. It's not that. But you know, that part of what I do like about Doom 2 is the addition of the extra enemies and the super shotgun. The super shotgun really rounded out Doom's arsenal in a stunning way. And, you know, if you're low on rockets and you're fighting a bunch of Mancubi, you're not going to use a chain gun unless you have to. You're gonna get out the super shotgun. Whereas if you're fighting a bunch of Barons or Hell Knights, you're gonna try to use rockets. That's a choice. And I've never liked that Doom Eternal's like, nope, you need to use this weapon. Yeah. I just don't like that.
I think Eternal does well is the feedback from your attacks and stuff, because
yes,
in the original Doom and in Doom 2, the monsters all make distinct noises. they all have very funny death animations, as exhibited by the end of Doom 2 being a parade of death animations that you control.
always funny.
But, yeah, exactly. But when I used to like timing it so that it looked like the imp was killing itself by throwing a fireball into its own face. I remember laughing out loud in sheer like sadistic glee when I was playing Doom Eternal. I first did a glory kill on the Arachnotron, and the way you do it is you grab their own leg, they scream in abject terror, and then you jam it into their eye.
I do love
and
that.
It's like what it takes me back to is the Arachnotrons from the original War from Doom 2, the first time they appear in Dead Simple on level 8, which is awesome level because it's like, hey, here's a bunch of monsters you've never seen before, and they're going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
You kill the Mancubus, and you're like, holy shit, that was rough as hell. They got, like, the three-way fireballs. Then the walls drop, and there's, like, a squad of Arachnotrons just surrounding the entire level. First time you've seen them as well. What a great level. But when you kill the Arachnotrons, they make the single coolest noise that's ever been recorded in human history.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish I could recreate it right now, but that's what I love about Doom. Everything sounds awesome and is perfect. The Mancubus is one of my favorite things ever because it's just this big, relatable mound of shit. Like, it's just like making horrible, like, disgusting noises. And then when you hit them, they just go...
I love its death animation, the way its flesh just kind of just sloughs off.
God.
It's so good.
That's the thing about Doom, that bestiary is just like... It's like they're my friends. I know them all intimately. I know all their death animation. I know all their noises. The archfile, when you kill it, and it goes like that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Can we just do impressions of Doom monsters for the next hour, please?
I'd like to get back to the topic at hand, which is how can we be pedantic about Doom clones?
This is what happens when you talk about Doom, though. Just go off. Like, it's just the most passionate game ever.
It's okay. We're not off topic. We're just okay. we're heading for an exit ramp, and I don't want to go. I don't want to take the exit ramp just yet. Stu, I think you mentioned the fact that, you know, speed is a factor here. So, you know, in Doom, like, mathematically speaking, you move incredibly quickly, quicker than any human being really should. So, is speed a factor in a Doom clone? Also important, is jumping a factor? Because Doom Guy does not jump at all, but a lot of Doom clone reminiscent games did have jumping. What do you So jumping a little bit? A lot? Too much? What do you think about jumping?
I don't personally think jumping disqualifies you because Doom clone for me is a certain type of level design, which is relatively intricate. With, you know, with keys and doors for those keys. Maybe they're not necessarily keys or doors, but gates like that, where something you needed an item to get past them. And of course, secrets. Now, the reason I can't discount jumping is because Duke Nukem 3D heavily features it. Like, you, the beginning of Duke 3D, you drop down into an area where the first thing you can do is jump up onto a window ledge and get an RPG. And that doesn't feel like a portrayal of Doom to me. It feels like an extension of it. And I don't think Doom disqualifies, I don't think jumping or necessarily crouching disqualify you, as long as it's still got that same exploration focus and those same kind of maps where it's worth exploring, you know? Mm-hmm. When you find resources, they're not permanent upgrades, but they make it easier. They make the level easier for you by giving you more weapons or more ammo or like way more health or something. It should be rewarding to explore, I think, is more important, and jumping is part of that. So yes.
Yeah, I would agree. Based on just, you know, Duke 3D was a pretty blatant Doom clone with, you know, more realistic environments and different interactions, but also, again, Quake. Quake is very derivative of Doom and had jumping, so yeah, jumping is totally permitted.
That was supposed to be the Quake jumping noise.
I got that.
Okay, good.
All right, so I think we're touching upon some important issues here where I think, Stu, you're talking about how the levels are a bigger thing than whether or not you can jump. So let me ask one more pedantic question about this. So exploration is important. What about tight corridors? Are tight corridors important?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, Doom 2 had this mix of, you know, big open areas, and then you go inside, and it was, you had, you know, larger rooms, but definitely, like, claustrophobic corridors was part of the design. So I don't know that it's required, but I would say you need a focus on interior areas, because that's where a lot of the tactics and strategy in Doom's combat came from. Like, how am I going to use these weapons in this small space, in this large space, in this this porridge is just right size space. Yeah, so to me, it's, you know, I don't know if you need it, but I think it should be present in to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, the original, like, going way back to Doom, the original Doom, is that first level, you know, E1, M1, everyone knows it, like, back to front. And the first thing that you see is outside into a large courtyard, which is clearly accessible because there's a blue ammo in the middle of a slime pit out there. And that's, you know, that large space is your, and Doom does this quite often, especially in the first episode, is large free spaces are often your reward for exploring. And like, you'll be able to, like, for example, on level 2 or 3, you can get outside of the main complex into the sort of out into the grounds, you know, and that's where you find, like, the chainsaw. That's where you find, like, a soul sphere. And, those intricate corridors, when they do give way to a larger space, is always very rewarding, I think. It's like you've stumbled across something that you shouldn't have. So to me, yes, it's important to have that, but you do need the contrast between the intimate, intricate, claustrophobic spaces and the large, more open areas. I hate to mention it again, but like Duke 3D does this very well with its sense of place. The fact you can get the jetpack and just go up out of bounds almost is just very, very cool. But even in Doom, it's there. Like, the first stage is a series of connected larger rooms with corridors between them that vary in what they offer. Like, the first room, if you turn around immediately, there's a larger space with some steps to show you, look, you can go up steps in this game. Following that round to a second larger room, which is still interior, but it has that large kind of, like a stage almost with former humans on it. And then, of course, the next area is even larger, and it's the slime pits where there's an imp up on a higher ledge taking pot shots at you. And it just creates this, this illusion of freedom, when you're obviously being funneled along. I mean, past the slime pits, there's a secret door to your right, which is how you get outside. And that's the kind of thing where a lot of, you know, players back in the day would have been messaging each other or talking to each other and saying, how the hell do you get out there? Because that's not easy to find if you're new to the game, if the game's fresh to you. To answer the actual question, I think they are necessary. I don't think it's that they are a must. I think there needs to be linearity is the sort of heart and soul of the games, really, but in a sense where it's more, you might have to go to the other end of the map and then come back to progress with a key or something. Like, I don't know if any of you, I'm sure you have, but has played Redneck Rampage?
Yes.
That's like the apex of this in terms of, like, there's a key lying around somewhere that's, like, almost impossible to see that opens a door. It doesn't tell you which door it opens. Hell of a game.
Alright then, let's move on to sharing some of our favorite Doom clones, because I feel like there are so many. I think we could all come up with a couple examples that we think are just fun games that sort of, you know, borrow ideas from Doom, but basically do their own thing, and we should reward them for it. So, why don't we start, David, why don't you, we'll do one at a time. So, Dave, why don't you just go ahead, pick one of your favorite Doom clones, David.
Well, I'm going to say Doom 2. I mean, okay. You don't get more literal Doom clone than that, because it was the same engine, the same enemies, but with more, the same weapons, but with one more. It followed id Software's model. What they would do is they would make a shareware game first, release it for free, and then sell you the full game because you wanted more. They did it with Keen, Wolfenstein, and then Doom. So the idea was, okay, the second game, since you know and love this, it's going to be full retail, no shareware. And it was, you know, very derivative, but in a good way. It was supposed to be more of the thing that you wanted. And so Doom 2, I still maintain, even in the FPS documentary, there's a chapter that called Attack of the Doom Clones. And the first one, I put Doom 2 right there because, like, it kind of kickstarted the Doom clones, in my opinion.
It's hard to disagree because, as we've discussed already, it does feel distinct from Doom. It feels like it's moving into a different space, I think, as a shooter. The level designs are very different, and it's still brilliant, you know. But you gave it one number. You gave it one number lower than the number I gave it. Therefore, we must fight to the death. Obviously, but it's a fantastic game that pushes Doom. Made the mod scene even richer, like insanely much richer, with its smart additions to the bestiary, as we discussed as well. And, you know, the super shotgun, which is just the funnest weapon ever and makes the coolest sounds ever. So what more can you want?
Certainly the end of the game, which has a very unusual boss fight, I would say that's certainly a massive departure from anything you see in the first Doom, for sure.
Oh, the Icon of Sin. Yeah.
I love that because it's like you're going to fight a wall with a really mean face, but inside it is the true final boss, right? Like you're shooting John Romero's head the whole time, which is just a lot of fun.
When I was a little kid, I found that by accident and it scared the shit out of me. I clipped through the wall because I wanted to see if there was anything behind the Icon of Sin, and it's just suddenly like, oh my god. That's what he says at the beginning. It's like, to destroy me, you must defeat John Romero in like backwards, I think. It's like the first thing he says. Mm-hmm. I like the Icon of Sin because when you start the level, all of the shit that you need is right in front of you, and you're like, oh boy. Just all the weapons in the game laid out. And you just know it's about to get hot. It's about to get rough. It's not that bad, actually, if you just grab one of the invulnerability icons and you're good at shooting rockets. It's all right. It's not too bad.
Actually, this is an interesting lateral step. Doom was intentionally designed, as was Wolfenstein, to allow you to beat any level if you started with just the default weapon, the pistol start. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's a requirement of the Doom clone, but it is a really cool feature. Like, that's Decino is my favorite Doom streamer. YouTube or whatever. And all of his maps, even when he plays a Megawad, which is a themed episode of Doom levels, he starts every level with just the pistol, 50 bullets and 100 health. And it's really cool to know that you could beat the commercial Doom games, Doom Wads, most of them, by starting with the default setup. Like, it gives you everything you need. And that level, to Stuart's point, like, here's everything right here. You're going to need all of this.
I think that's awesome, but nothing in this world is going to get me to do perfect hatred and ultraviolence with a pistol start. It's not happening.
No, just forget it. I can't do it either. I just like that it is a thing.
All right, Stu, why don't you share a Doom clone?
Okay, I'm going to pick Rise of the Triad because I don't have another outlet to talk about it, really.
Okay.
Rise of the Triad is actually closer to Wolfenstein. I think it might actually be the Wolfenstein engine running it.
It is, yeah.
But it's also post-Doom by, I want to say 95, 96. I could be wrong here. But what Rise of the Triad is completely out of its mind. Like, it's one of those games where they just went, every single idea they had, they went, yeah, throw it in. Like, so not only can you turn into a god with god mode, as in actual, whoa, wave your hands, glide going everywhere, killing everything, but there's also dog mode where you turn into a dog and you can get through small gaps and like bite enemies with the jugular and kill them and stuff. You can get like shrooms mode where the screen starts wobbling around crazy like you're on, Psilocybin or whatever it's called. Bouncy mode where you'll be bouncing around off the walls and completely like rubber and like a pinball. All the enemies, you have infinite ammo for all your weapons except for rockets. So you're just constantly firing basically while bouncing around off these bounce pads, climbing up floating platforms, dodging fire traps, dodging spear traps, shooting triad members in the face. And it's a completely insane game. I would struggle to say it was definitively great because it really is a hot mess, but it's one of the most it's a fascinating hot mess, you know? Like, because nothing had been set in stone yet. It's an FPS which has a live system. I think that Wolfenstein may have had that as well. But you've got collectible coins to get more lives. You've got little weird ideas like you collect porridge to get your health up. But if you shoot the porridge with a rocket, it cooks it and gives you more health. Just every idea they had, they threw in there. And there's something about that that just like sings to me, you know? I love it. And of course, recently Night Dive put out Rise of the Triad Ludicrous Edition, which I suggest you buy because it's an awesome, finally this game can be played properly on a modern PC. With all the options you could even imagine, there's like no reason for them to have gone so hard on the options. Like all the alternative HUDs you can emulate different sound cards to get the soundtrack sounding the way you remember it.
Oh.
It's crazy how much effort they put into this. All of the original expansions, Extreme Rise of the Triad, all that stuff. And they added a brand new episode full of new levels in there, plus all the multiplayer. It's amazing. I strongly recommend it. And I didn't just pick it to have an excuse to plug that. Okay. I genuinely want people to buy it because it's a fantastic game.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to nominate one myself. And I want to talk about Alien Trilogy a little bit because that was one I had on PlayStation. I think it came on Saturn too, but I definitely remember playing it on PlayStation. And it's funny. They call it Alien Trilogy because in theory, it's based on the first three Alien movies, which, by the way, can you imagine a reality where there are only three Alien movies? It's kind of weird to think about now, but really, when you get down to it, it's like 90% aliens because you are, you know, you're in these bases, you've got guns, all the guns are from the film, almost all the sounds are from the Aliens film, and some of them, like most of the monsters are basically, you know, facehuggers and the xenomorphs, and I think they have some of the dog ones later on because that's from Alien 3, but really what it is it's a first-person shooter with a very thorough alien skin on top of it. And I think at the time, I was just very excited to have, you know, this sort of comprehensive effect. Like, you've got the radar in the lower screen. It makes all the radar noises, you know, the motion detector. The guns sound just like the movie guns. And I also like that, you know, you shoot the aliens, and of course, they leave behind this bloody mess. But their blood is acid, so if you walk over a dead body, you take some damage. That's cool.
I get grossed out by the facehuggers crawling up the screen. It freaks me out every time it happens.
That is weird, yeah. That is very strange.
And that's taken from the Jaguar Alien vs. Predator game, incidentally, just for a bit of random trivia there.
Oh, okay.
Well, not taken from it, but like it's the first thing you'd think to put in an alien game, a first-person alien game, is a facehugger crawling up your face. it's so gross every time it happens. I haven't played this game extensively. Does the variety visually get better? Because the early levels are all just like, you're on a spaceship, yeah. But does it ever change? Does it ever change like color even or get like any different?
Yeah. I think later levels get like a little bit more alien, but it's kind of, yeah. I think that's probably one of the downsides to the game is that, you know, eventually I think you're going to do everything you're going to do in the game pretty quickly. So it's like, you have to basically get all in and like, you know, if this is fun for you, running around, shooting the aliens, and picking up, you know, stuff from the movie, that's going to work. But I think if you get tired of that, then you might just get tired of it. Like, I
oh, yeah, no, that's it. Not me. That's not me attacking it. I like this game. I only played it a little bit because, I don't know why. I should get stuck into it. There's a fair few PS1 FPSs that are really weird that I want to play, like PO'd, but that's another episode.
Yeah. I can't remember if this is Alien Trilogy or Alien versus Predator. I think it might be Alien versus Predator, but you can be the human. You can be a Marine. And one of the things I thought was cool was when you got near an enemy, your radar would ping and you hear the d-d-d-d, and it was really, really atmospheric. And I like that just because it's a first person shooter, I have to throw it in there. It's Alien Trilogy adjacent. And I like that game.
I think that happens in Trilogy as well. You get the radar in Trilogy as well. It's absolutely necessary as well.
It is. Okay, that makes sense.
You definitely have the radar. Yeah. Absolutely. And it makes all the noises.
Yeah, it's a cool game. I liked it. I thought that the shotgun was really satisfying to use, and I liked it a lot.
All right, David, why don't you give us another Doom clone of yours?
I'm going to throw out Doom 64, which I also like more than Doom 2. And here's why. First of all, it wasn't just a Doom port. Doom was being ported to everything and then some back in the day. And most of them were just ports of Doom and or Doom 2. But Doom 64 took all of Doom and Doom 2's weapons and monsters, gave them new looks, not all of which work, but it was still a cool, you know, by that time, what was this, 1997, Doom had been a thing for four years, so it was like a, you know, giving it a fresh coat of paint kind of revitalized it a little. The level design and atmosphere, as we said earlier, much more in line with the original Doom's horror motifs, and it had more of an emphasis on even more exploration, which you had to do very thoroughly because there are a lot more puzzles, which I thought was a cool addition to Doom. I mean, there were puzzle-like elements to Doom and Doom 2, but Doom 64 kind of leaned into that, not to the same degree as something like Hexen, which was just so, you know, inscrutable at times. Yeah. But I really, really enjoyed Doom 64. I love that game.
And Doom 64 has the game-long quest to get all the pieces for the Unmaker that makes the final boss much easier. And getting that is, like, full-on, you need a guide. Like, you're not going to find that off your own back. Like, I would be astonished if someone was able to do that, like, now, you know?
Right.
The same with, like, getting to the level Hectic, which is the most obtuse requirements to get it. I think it's, like, shoot all the explosive barrels on level one except for the one at the beginning.
Yeah.
Then go back and shoot that one, and then a teleporter will open.
I think,
and the then it will take you to Hectic, there, which is impossible.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say the saving grace was, like, unlike Hexen, you don't need the Unmaker. It will make the final boss easier, but you can still get through the whole game. I mean, I beat that whole game and only had, like, I think I found it somewhere. Because one part is slightly easier to find than the others, as I recall.
Yeah.
But even though it wasn't fully powered up, like, it was a cool thing. I like the idea of, like, hey, there's this optional weapon that you can assemble rather than just finding it full and intact like the other ones. I thought that was a cool thing. And again, totally optional.
The night dive port obviously makes it easier, which is nice because, you know, you can finally play that game with a mouse and keyboard if you want to.
Yes.
Yeah, Doom 64 was definitely an early favorite of mine because, like I said, I didn't have a gaming PC. So I got the PlayStation version. I got the Doom 64 for my N64. And I remember, you know, having seen so much of Doom on a friend's PC and on the PlayStation, getting Doom 64 home and putting it in the machine, it was kind of mind-blowing how different it looks and how different it feels and how different it sounds. Lighting, especially, they had a lot of lighting tricks they used. And, of course, they actually used proper 3D graphics, so, like, the levels are more complicated. You can, like, you know, the original Doom, you can never go over a space you would go under a space, like, because it doesn't really exist. But Doom 64 lets you do that because it's all 3D now. So,
yeah, doesn't it have early on, like, a spiral staircase that would be completely impossible on the original engine? I might be wrong about that. But Yeah, the addition of the new monsters like the Nightmare Imps and things like that as well. The sound effects from the PS1 version I thought fit this version a lot better because the way they redrew the guns and stuff. Yeah, it's tremendous. It's like just basically Doom 3, but not. It's fantastic. It's better than friggin' Final Doom. I'll tell you that much. And I don't hate Final Doom, but I do hate parts of Final Doom.
And we should probably mention that it is made by not id Software. I think that they had involvement, but it was made by Midway San Diego. So
yeah.
It's very much someone else looking at Doom and making more Doom. They just had the official license to it. So, well, you know.
It was Doom 64 that has that freaking awesome opening where it's like the monsters all fighting and it zooms out to reveal the environment as the Doom logo. It's something badass.
Yes, yes, yes. And then a baby cries.
And then I was going to say, the crying babies. You got to mention the crying babies.
It is an all-time great opening. Just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Stu, why don't you give us another Doom clone?
I'm not going to talk about it that much, but I want to just shout out Zero Tolerance on the Mega Drive real quick.
Okay.
Zero Tolerance is this... it's not Wolfenstein quite, but it's also not Doom, and it couldn't be Doom, obviously, on the Mega Drive. You need the 32X for that, and even then, that was not the best version of the game by some distance. But Zero Tolerance, I want to shout out, just because what you essentially do is you've got to clear out all the maps. It's FPS, obviously. You pick your character, they've got like relatively different stats, and then you have to clear out each floor of this space station or this space base or whatever it is that you're on. You've got a sort of semi-radar to tell you where the enemies are, but the thing that makes Zero Tolerance really fun to this day, in my opinion, is the way that they animated the enemies when you shoot them with a shotgun and they go flying back into the walls. Like, there was no reason for them to go that hard. But they know, they were like, this game's a little bit limited. There's not a huge amount you can do here because it's a Mega Drive FPS. So make it that when you shoot the enemies where they really hurt, and like make it clear that they've been really badly hurt. So you'll shoot your shotgun enemy at close range, blood spews out of them, they'll fly back into the wall, another blood splatter will appear, and then they slump over dead. And it's like, yeah, this game's cool. Zero Tolerance, they were going to do a sequel called Beyond Zero Tolerance that got cancelled, but you can play it on, you can prototype it out there on the internet, or if you buy Zero Tolerance from Cubite on the Switch. I think it's on the Switch. It might be on other stuff as well. You're getting Zero Tolerance, Beyond Zero Tolerance, and the levels that were intended for the Mega CD version of the Sega CD version of Zero Tolerance. They never came out, and they're on there as well. So if you are a big fan of, admittedly, to most people, quite mid Mega Drive FPSs, then I highly recommend the Zero Tolerance collection. I really do think it's worth a look, because I promise you, you will be pleasantly surprised by it.
Neat. I didn't really think about first-person shooters on the Sega Genesis Mega Drive, so that's kind of a surprise for me.
There's only like two, is that Bloodshot and the FPS level of Toy Story, which isn't really a shooter at all. There's probably more. Oh, yeah, Corporation, kind of, but there's probably more I'm forgetting as well. You start me on the Mega Drive, it's 35 the other day, and that is the ultimate console. The ultimate.
Well, I'd like to mention blood, not the fluid floating in my body. Not the fluid floating in my body, but...
What a game, Diamond. What a game.
The 1997 first-person shooter. Now, I think blood kind of has a lot more in common with Duke Nukem in that first of all, it's a build engine game, and you've got a wisecracking hero, so there's a lot of Duke DNA in it. But I think what's more important is that, again, we talked about, you know, mood and atmosphere. So blood is definitely a horror game, you know. Your character like worked for a demon or something and like got cast out and they wake up in a shallow grave. Yeah. It's like
Caleb is the guy. I think his name is Caleb.
Caleb. Yes. So the entire game has a very strong, you know, horror themes, and there's demons and there's monsters. Like, I don't know if you're supposed to be like, if you're supposed to work for Satan or just some monster, but like, it's very clear that you were dealing with these sort of dark forces. And
the first thing that happens is you come out of a coffin. So that I live again.
I love it.
Oh, the blood is peak. Like, when I was a kid, blood used to frighten me as well. Like, kicking the heads around and, oh, it was so violent. Like, it felt illegal, you know? It was that level of unpleasantness. It's like, this game is called Blood. That's so intense. and then you play it and you're just pitchforking zombies to pieces. It's horrible. I love it.
The voodoo doll. Just an all-time great weapon.
Oh my god. The whole game is just like, we could do an hour on blood, seriously. There's so much cool shit in that game. I just love the whole idea of like the flare gun. You shoot an enemy once and then you wait and eventually they go on fire. But initially when I played it, I was like, why isn't this gun doing anything? And I was just firing it over and over again. But all you need to do is fire once and then just wait. And yeah, brilliant. Sorry, dear Diamond, you picked a great game here. You've got me all riled up.
Yes, I suppose that we could probably talk about Blood a lot, maybe even its own episode. But I definitely had to highlight it here because, again, I think before I ever got a good copy of Doom on my PC, I had a copy of Blood that I managed to get working. Oof. And
wow.
Just, yeah, the weapon variety, so many weird weapons in that game. It's funny, at the time, I actually had not seen that many horror films, but like, if you revisit it now, it's like, it is packed to the gills in implicit references to horror films, you know, almost too many, you know?
It's like Duke 3D referencing like movies and stuff. It's very much in that engine, in that vibe. And it is in that engine as well. So, the thing about Blood is like, of the ones that we've talked about behind Doom, this is one of my top ones. Like, I love this game. This game is hard as hell. The first level is really hard if you don't know what you're doing. And even if you do know what you're doing, it can be quite difficult, especially you go into the church and you're surrounded by the monks with machine guns. And unless you are good already at throwing dynamite, which can kill you if you do it wrong. It's nails hard game, but really fascinating. Which I think it's interesting they front loaded the difficulty like that, because once you beat that level, it starts to get a lot easier because you start to get weapons. And oh man, what a game! Yeah, fantastic. You can buy it on now as Blood Fresh Supply from Night Dive, and there are some elements of it that are kind of fucked up, but you won't know them unless you're a complete nerd, so it's okay.
That first level was really long too, like almost a game in and of itself. There was just so much to see there. And I think back then, in the 90s, in the shareware era, the first level was what you played the most. Because if you had shareware, you know, it didn't cost anything. And if you download, I think it was like $5 if you bought it in a store. And so most people had exposure to that first level. And Blood put on a good showing. I did, as much as I enjoy it, I did find it, and all three of the Build Engine games, at least from the 90s, really hard. Because you just take so much damage with every shot. But that kind of increased the, you know, that made the challenge more fun, especially coming from a lot of Doom, as I did.
I think it's encouraging you in like that and in Doom Nukem 3D to use the med kit, to use the doctor's bag and stuff, like to keep your eye on the inventory. But what Doom, I mean, the reason Doom is superior to those games is because you don't have to worry about any of that shit. It's all there in front of you. It's all laid out. And I love Duke and I love Blood, but Doom is like, if I could give a game an 11 out of 10, it would be Doom. Like, it's the top. It's the top. That's the bar. No one's cleared it.
Why don't we go one more time, and David, one last Doom clone for you.
Well, we talked a good bit about Heretic and Hexen. I think Heretic was, just a quick mention here, I think it was probably the closest Doom clone, other than Doom 2, of course. Like, that really just did feel like a reskin of Doom, but with a fantasy motif. So I'll mention Descent. That was one of the first that was a Doom clone, but it really broke out of that mold in certain ways. The Six Degrees of Freedom was really cool. It made a lot of people motion sick. But it offered a literal new perspective on first person shooters. And I, as a kid, like, I got lost a lot, but I just remember feeling like, wow, this is such a cool world to explore. And I'm a ship instead of a big buff dude with a shotgun. It felt, it had one foot in Doom Clone and one foot in its own in its own little world. And I really liked Descent. I thought it was a lot of fun. It still holds up pretty well today, especially because there are source ports that smooth out a lot of the, you know, a lot of the jaggies and the pixels, and that sort of thing.
DX Rebirth.
Yes, that's it.
And it makes the game completely playable in full 3D with the mouse and everything. It's absolutely fantastic to this day. Holds up really well. There's a new one with a different name that I forget the name of, and I really need to try it out.
I'm glad you mentioned the mouse, because I think that might have been the first FPS where I used the mouse, because it kind of felt necessary. Like, the controls were just a little more complex than Doom, that I kind of needed a mouse to just kind of help me, you know, rotate and orient myself more in these corridors as I was zooming around them.
Yes, and it's funny we should mention this now, because we recently recorded a podcast, and we need to establish this. So this is Descent, which is a video game, as opposed to The Descent, which is a terrifying film about women in caves that we've discussed recently on our community podcast.
Good movie.
Yes, very good movie, but also terrifying.
Yes.
Because of the caves. Also monsters, but really the caves. Mm-hmm. Stu, you have one more from you?
I have talked about it extensively, but I do want to give the nod again to Duke Nukem 3D, because there's a reason it's held in such esteem. There's a reason people cared about Duke Nukem Forever once upon a time. What a disappointment that was. I don't want to talk about Duke too much, because I do plan to do a Duke episode sometime.
I know you will, yes.
It deserves respect, and I'm going to give it that respect. But it was huge. It was Doom, except the main thing for Duke Nukem 3D that made it stand out was interactivity, because it was like, oh my god, you can do stuff. You can go to the toilet. You can give money to strippers and look at boobies. You can turn on like a projector. You can like go into a wanking booth and masturbate or whatever. It's just like, I know all the things you can do are just gross things, but that's what it was. That's who it was for. You know, it was for 14-year-old boys. But it's just a tremendous game with this great verticality, really fantastic secrets and level design, like all the way through the game as well. All three episodes, just really good the whole time. Some of these games, their first episode was amazing, and then the rest of them were a bit more kind of like, okay, let's get the rest of the episodes done, you know. But not Duke 3D. That was good the whole way through. Plus, the expansion was fantastic as well. And it's kind of a reason why it developed its own scene with the build engine, with, you know, a follow-up Shadow Warrior, which we haven't mentioned at all, which is great, by the way, except it's racist as hell. And of course blood, you know, just a tremendous, like, you know, lineage of games there. But Duke was the one that started that whole kind of heavy interactivity, slightly more focus on inventory, slightly more focus on messing around with things like RC cars in the middle of a level and stuff like that. Game with a real sense of humor and a real sense of fun, you know. I love it to death, and it's still available on everything, because there's I think it's called World Tour Edition, and it's a little bit maligned because it's Gearbox now, but I say, don't worry about that, life's too short, just, you know, get that, you'll have Duke, and you'll have the Rebirth, and you'll have the brand new World Tour expansion made by the original level designers, which is extremely good. There was a version called the Megaton Edition, which had more, but that's not available anymore. You snooze, you lose. Sorry.
Yeah. I have to jump on the Duke Love bandwagon here, because, first of all, I love that some of the interactivity mechanics had a function. Like, if you go up to a urinal and you take a piss, you actually regain a little bit of health. Now, if you break toilets or urinals, it spouts up water. You can actually drink that, and you get one health back every time you take a little sip.
Yeah. Just standing there waiting for ages while your health takes back up. Yeah.
And that was a really cool thing, because most of the levels, at least the ones set on Earth, had toilets somewhere. And so, you know, mm-hmm. if you were kind of down on your luck and you couldn't find any health kits, you could just go slurp from a toilet for 30 or 45 minutes.
But even better, you can go to a Duke Nukem arcade machine, and then you select it, and he says, I don't have time to play with myself. I'm like, I get it.
Like, I get it. That's just funny.
But no, it's introducing things like the Hollow Duke, where you can drop, the enemies will then focus on, which is like completely fresh to me. It's like, I mean, it's kind of from Heretic a little bit.
Yeah.
You can use like the steroids, which give you super speed and stuff. It's a bit like the wings that you get in Heretic, but Heretic have the edge with the Tome of Power that transforms every weapon to make them a little bit more interesting, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. And we've touched on this a bit, but, like the second episode takes place on this moon base and it's kind of cool. It's unique, but, episode one, especially the locations that you visit felt real. Like the Doom engine was made for abstract level design. And it's really like, it feels like its own, it feels like a futuristic setting. But in the first and second levels of episode one of Duke 3D are two of my favorite levels of all time, just because they feel like real places. Like you can even shoot out vents and like crawl in them and drop down in other rooms. They have a strong sense of place that you didn't see realistic environments in video games a lot at that time, much less to the scale of Duke 3D, and they were just so impressive.
The level two of Duke 3D, if memory serves, when you go into the adult porno store, and then at the back of the porno store, you go through a vent, and that's when you first find the women in, like, the cocoons.
Yes.
And it's almost like a moment of just, like, what's going on here? They've hid this away quite nicely. And then, of course, the whole impetus for the whole game, and I apologize in advance, is the whole, you know, nobody steals our chicks and lives. And, you know, I stand by that. I stand by that as a motivation. And then, you know, level two, you can go and blow up an entire freaking building, which is awesome.
Yes.
You go to the San Andreas Fault and you witness one of the biggest earthquakes imaginable. You even go in a nuclear submarine at one point. It's just a very good sense of doing cool stuff. But then, what I should mention, because I think the fight's going to enjoy this, is in the second episode, you go on the Enterprise. One of the levels is just the Enterprise. Like, you look at the map, and it's fully just it. It's great.
I'm actually blanking right now. Did Duke Nukem weapons have alternate fire modes?
No.
No, I don't think so.
No, okay. Because that was...
Heretic and Hexen had the Tome of Power for the alt fire, but that didn't. The first one I can think of with alt fire was... God, what was it? That's a good question.
Did Blood Heretic definitely have alt fire? I don't remember Heretic having alt fire, but I could be wrong.
Blood definitely has it.
It was only when you use the Tome of Power, I think. The Tome gives you an alternate fire. It's not... But Blood definitely has it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Blood definitely has it. Yeah, because you can use the... One of the ones I love is the machine gun with its just kind of straight fire, but if you use the alt fire, you actually do a sort of spray the room. Mm-hmm. It's really, really cool. What a game. What a Doom clone.
Yes.
And I have one more I wanted to mention, just because, again, I was buying a lot of these games on console because I wanted to have more Doom-like experiences. So for the Sega Saturn, later on PlayStation, and I think these days, actually very recently, they made a PC port of it, like a modern PC port of it.
Yes, and it's terrific.
Is Power Slave. And Power Slave is a really weird one because at first you're like, wait, it's an Egyptian first-person shooter? But there's a twist. It's aliens. So you're in Egypt, but there's aliens, and you're shooting these sort of creatures that are kind of like, you know, beetles and like, you know, like dog-headed, like god people, but I guess they're the aliens are animating them. But you do talk to, like, I think Kim Ramsey's ghost or something, and he, like, tells you what to do.
Yeah.
And
it's like the mysterious voice in Wario Land 3. It tells you where to go next.
But there's also kind of, you know, dare I say the word, a Metroidvania feel, because...
Well, there is, directly. I mean, of course, yeah.
Yeah, because King Ramsey says, I need you to get these things for me. And when you pick up these items at different stages, they're not just, like, tokens. They give you, like, new powers and abilities.
Oh, cool.
And it lets you, like, progress further and do things you couldn't do before. So, like, it's interesting. And I think you also revisit levels a little bit more often. Like, you don't just, like... It's not just, like, do stage one, stage two, stage three. It's like, oh, now you're over here. Now you're on a camel to go this place. Like... Also, the camels make a noise that I think is just from Doom, so I think that's funny, too.
Yeah, the exit to the level is a camel. It's great. But no, it's like, just to make that, just to sort of clarify slightly, even though what you said is more than correct, it's like you'll go to an area, you'll find whatever you need, exit, you'll go to the next area, and you'll get an item like that lets you swim.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, okay, now I can swim. I can go back to Karnak, and there was a river there. I can dive into the river and see what's down there. You'll find another exit, and then that will lead you to the next level. Go to that level. Then you get an item that lets you double jump or hover or glide or something. And the whole game is just built around you progressively getting more and more maneuverable and powerful and hiding little secrets everywhere, in every little nook and cranny, like really well-hidden stuff. It's a brilliant game, Power Slave. It's really, really good. And the Saturn version was probably the best version until the PC, like, new one came around. To me, it was called Exhumed, because they called it Exhumed in PAL for some reason.
Okay.
And when they did the remake, they called it Power Slave Exhumed, which is the perfect way to, to nail this to the ground. But no, I compare it a little bit to Metroid Prime. Honestly, I feel like it's like the proto for that, but I like it better than Metroid Prime. So it's okay.
Power Slave Exhumed. So yeah, Konami should just call the new Contra Probotector, right? With put a colon in there.
Hell yeah. But oh, I got to warn people, Power Slave on the PC, get Power Slave Exhumed. Don't just get Power Slave, because you can buy that separately, and it's nothing like this. Like the original PC version of Power Slave is a completely different game with none of this interesting stuff. It's just like a normal first-person shooter with Egyptian shit. It's not horrible, but it ain't Power Slave Exhumed, so be careful. Buyer beware.
Well, I think we've touched upon everything, and I wanted to have a section at the end about what happened to the Doom clone, but I think we kind of touched upon it because we said it. And I, honestly, you gave the example I would have given, which is Half-Life. Half-Life arrived. Amazingly, this the timeline is amazing. So Doom launched December 1983. Half-Life launched November 1998. So almost exactly 5 years later, we got a, you know, pun intended, game changer, and it just like, yes, it's a first-person shooter in that you have this character and you have a bunch of guns, but it just, it does not have the same, it has a different mood, has a different atmosphere, has different, you know, different goals, and just totally, totally changed things up and really altered our expectations for what the genre could offer. And I think it led to, a lot of great games. I think it also led to maybe some of a lot of the same games. So I do appreciate that now we do have this sort of alternate branch, and we have even more kinds of first-person shooters. You know, we have first-person shooters without shooting. You know, we have the walking simulators, which are basically, you know, explore a place, and maybe you get some keys, and maybe you find out your sister was gay the whole time, but really, you know, Gone Home is kind of a Doom clone, sort of.
I can't believe you spoiled Gone Home.
It's all right. I think you can still enjoy it, even if you know about the queer twist.
Well, I think it's interesting that first-person went from, if you are playing in first person, you will be shooting, to what it is now. I mean, Myst was first person, but obviously it was a clicking game. But now real Myst lets you strafe your way through the island, Myst Island, you know. Someone should mod real Myst and give you the super shotgun.
But I'm pretty sure that exists. No reason.
I bet that exists. Yeah. But it is fascinating how the sort of genre has kind of evolved, because now we have so many different branches of first-person shooter. We've got the COD-alike, so the Call of Duty-alike, which no one really competes with anyway, because they can't. And the boomer shooters are out there now, you know. And then the sort of mid-tier stuff like Chernobylite and things like that. But it's a fascinating world that we've come to, and I'm really glad that everything seems to exist together now. Like, when Half-Life was popular, old-school shooters were just, like, not on the radar because nobody cared about them anymore. It was just like, this is the new hotness. You know, cinematic gaming. And that extended to even, like, I would say arguably, like, Quake 2 leans more in that direction as well. Mm-hmm. Good as it is, it does lean in that direction, I think. Now boomer shooters have brought everything back, so there's no reason to complain. You can get what you want from whatever angle you choose to approach it. It's great.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I love that there's such a broad spectrum of games. You know, people who still want like a Halo or Call of Duty or Battlefield, those are out there. But I'm very happy to see the boomer shooter, aka the Doom clone and Doom clone adjacent games, kind of come back, because those are still the shooters I enjoy the most. I think that a lot of people wrongly dismissed Doom then and even now as just, you know, a shooting gallery with no thinking involved. I love the level design. I love the exploration. I love that there is a lot of strategy to it, actually. And that that spirit is alive and well, not only in Doom itself, because it's still very relevant, you know, 30 years on, but in the types of games we are seeing from boomer shooters. It's pretty cool.
Yes, I think it's a wonderful time to put yourself in the shoes of a Marine or a creepy cultist or a piece of Chex. It's a Chex quest. I don't know actually who you play as a Chex quest, but still, all these options.
Sexiest man alive, didn't you?
All these options and more are available to you, and I think it's wonderful. So I think that's the message we take away from Doom, is that Doom is for everyone, and Doom clones are for everyone, because you can put anything you want in there and do something creative with it, you know, more than ever. Well, before we finish up, I know, David, you have a lot. You probably have probably the biggest thing to share, and you're on the show less frequently than me and Stu. So please talk about FPS, because you let me watch a copy of that this year, and I really enjoyed it. So please tell me about FPS.
Yeah, so FPS, first-person shooter, is a documentary about puzzle games. It's about first-person shooters, as the title would lead you to believe. And it is available now digitally at fpsdoc.com. I believe we'll be doing another run of physical copies either late this year in time for holiday sales or early next. Also, a couple of other cool things. I'm writing a digital book about the making of Sigil 2 that will be included in John Romero's Sigil 2 retail box collector's item. So look out for that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun getting to interview him. I'm also a narrative designer for Romero Games, so I kind of have easy access, which has been fun. But also, I am writing another book for Boss Fight Books called But Can It Run Doom? Which is an exploration of a lot of the typical and atypical Doom ports we've seen over the years. So, you know, Super Nintendo, PlayStation, but also
the printer.
yeah, exactly. Like, you know, sheep in Minecraft, that sort of thing. So a lot of Doom stuff coming down the pipe. Also, December 10th, when Doom turns 30, I'm going to be doing a live stream with John Romero and a very special guest. So if this episode is out by then and you can hear this.
A very special guest.
A very special guest.
Holy crap. Is it a real Doom guy?
It is. It is, because John Romero posed for Doom guy as the cover. So it is Doom guy. Doom guy will be there.
Nice.
Awesome. Fantastic. And anything else, like, if people want to find you on the internet, where should they look for you?
DavidO'Craddock.com, which I don't update as regularly as I should, but I'll get on that soon, and at DavidO'Craddock on Twitter/X.
All right, Stu, your turn.
All right, first of all, I'm going to plug real quick the YouTuber Civi11, who covers a lot of stuff like this, CIVVIE number 11 on YouTube. Lots of FPS coverage in extremely good detail without resorting to the usual tropes and nastiness. I find he's very likable. Highly recommend him. Much better than me on YouTube, I'll tell you that much. But yeah, you can find me at Stupacabra on Twitter/X and Stuart Jip on Blue Sky. And I've just got a book come out, All Games Are Good. It's now in paperback, and it's on Amazon.com, except it's not at the moment because they don't have any copies, and I think they've actually sold out of them, which is really, really exciting, although I don't know what their allocation was. So either way, I'm rubbing my hands together. But it's a good book. You'll like it. I talk about Doom and various other Doom clones in there in extremely positive, glowing terms. And it's good. So buy it immediately, even if you can't really afford to. Just buy it, please.
You know, Stu, we often get a lot of joking responses from our listeners. You know, when you come on the podcast and you say a game, you talk about a game in less than glowing terms. Like, I thought you liked to say that all games are good. When is All Games Are Bad coming out? But
I cannot tell you how bored of that I am. But yeah, go on. Sorry.
Given our discussion today, I wonder if there isn't a way to write a book called All Games Are Doom.
It's feasible. Yeah,
it is.
I mean, the joke I always make is when they say, "Oh, I thought you said all games are good." I always say, "Yeah, that was a typo. It was meant to be called All Games Are Shit." but yeah, I knew what I was getting into with that one. I knew that I could never criticize anything again. You know. But you know, the thing is, it's an incredibly good book, and you should definitely buy it. That's my theory.
Thank you. And as for me, well, my name is Diamond Fight. As I mentioned, you can find me around the internet as Fight Club, FEITCLUB. That's my last name and a weapon that you really won't find in Doom or most Doom clones for that matter. And this has been an episode of Retronauts. We thank you very much for listening. You can enjoy our program for free. You can do that, and we welcome you. But if you go to patreon.com/retronauts, you can, for $3 a month, get early access to all our episodes and a higher quality bitrate. And for $5 a month, which is just $2 more, the numbers I just said, guess what? You get exclusive episodes every month, two exclusive episodes. You also get columns from me, which I read to you as a mini podcast. You get Discord access, and you get our monthly community podcast. It's just a lot of stuff for just $5 a month.
Are you telling me we got all those things for just $5?
It's true.
What the heck? That's crazy. Where's my wallet?
It is a lot. I mean, what was the original cost for Doom in 1993? If you wanted to pay for it, was it $10?
Oh, I think it was closer to like 35 to 40, maybe 50, like the full game. Yeah, I think. Yeah.
And that's in 1993 dollars. Think about what you get for $5 for Retronauts in 2023. That's
so much more than
Doom. Bargain. It's a bargain.
Truly.
But in any case, we appreciate your listeners. Thank you very much. By all means, if you're listening to this, send us, you know, add us on social media or go to our Discord and tell us what your favorite Doom clones. Tell us why there are specific rules that makes a Doom clone not a Doom clone. Do you think Quake is not a Doom clone? Tell us why. I want to know. I want you to tell me.
Don't encourage them to argue about genre parameters. Now they'll be dancing for hours.
We want the engagement, Stu. We want it. We crave it. All right. Well, we're out of time for today. So as we leave, let's all give our best grunts. So.
What was that?
That's the death sound.
Oh, okay. I'll do some incubus noises then.
Good night.